their customers. Online at rbtechvt.com. RB Technologies, efficiency through technology.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you had a fabulous weekend, a beautiful day out there today. Thanks for spending part of it with us. Big story this morning, the announcement early this morning that IBM is being sold to GlobalFoundries. This is an investment arm of the Abu Dhabi government. So I think we're talking some deep pockets here. I find this to be a bit of a strange deal. This was IBM thought when they went out on the market to sell itself that they'd be worth some $2 billion. It turns out that they are so unprofitable. Those of you that have been in the business world can understand this, that sometimes you actually have to pay somebody to take a business off of your hands. And that's the case here. $1.5 billion is going to be going to GlobalFoundries, that IBM will be paying over a three-year period here, and they will be taking over just about all of IBM. There's one small arm of it that will not be taken over. The bottom line here, everything I'm reading in the business press here this morning, is that this is not the tragic news that we had been fearing for years, where they might get bought out and then basically have the operation shut down because it was not profitable. This company is investing heavily into this kind of technology. And while IBM's going in a completely different direction, kind of really going for more of this, what we call cloud computing, GlobalFoundries is not. So apparently this will be for the short term here, maybe for the long term, but for the moment here, good news for the some 4,000 employees who are left at IBM, now soon to be GlobalFoundries. So we'll be covering this story throughout the course of the week. The governor will join us in about an hour. He's going to be holding a press conference in about 20 minutes to talk about this. We'll get to some questions for him, and then we'll have some people throughout the course of the week who are knowledgeable on this, who can share some info with us. So we'll get to that story today and as we proceed. We'd love to hear from you this morning. Our phone number's on the program, the usual, 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us toll-free at 877-291-8255. Later this hour, we're going to chat about the St. Albans Raid, which was the northernmost part of the Civil War. It's a heck of a story, and a longtime journalist and a guy that I worked with at the Free Press, Ted Tedford, is going to join us later this hour. We're going to talk about a fictionalized version that he has of that story. We're going to begin this morning and talk about the power of co-ops, in particular food co-ops. And again, we take your calls at 244-1777. And our toll-free line's at 877-291-8255. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Kari Bradley, who's the general manager at Hunger Mountain Co-op. Chris Riddell is the with the Granite City Grocery Co-op, which is actually in the development stage. And who knew? But October is National Co-op Month. Kari, can you start us off here? Let's talk a little bit about the Hunger Mountain Co-op. You've been there 10 years. So how's it doing?
Hunger Mountain Co-op is doing great. Thank you very much for having us, and it's a pleasure to be here, especially in October Co-op Month. Hunger Mountain just turned 42 years old, so we're of the generation of the late 60s, early 70s food co-ops that has always had a focus mainly on natural foods and local foods. And so we'll be talking about that more at our annual meeting coming up on November 9th. We just passed the 7,000 member owner mark. Wow. Which is great. It's a testament to how supported we are by the community. It's just a pleasure to be here to talk about co-ops.
Describe to people how the co-op model works, though. It's different than Shaw's and Hannaford's.
Yeah, exactly. So we are owned by our members. We're a consumer co-op, which means that the owners are the customers, people that purchase the food. We also have a lot of our staff are member owners, and a lot of our vendors are member owners. But basically, the community owns the business. Everybody contributes equity investment into the co-op, and then we, as a group, govern the co-op. So we have a board of directors, nine people as our council, and they are charged with hiring and supervising the management, general manager, and the management team. And basically, the key difference is between us and outside an owned business is that we are owned by the community, and we have a different purpose. Purpose not to generate profit or return on investment for non-local investors, but to meet the needs of our member owners and to deliver on our mission. And our mission is basically a triple bottom line: health, sustainability, cooperation, environmental, social, and financial. So that's really the key thing that sets us apart. There's no way we would ever be sold to a foreign investment arm. It's just not going to happen. Not in the cards with co-ops.
Global Foundries isn't going to be coming in and taking over.
Don't see it.
So what besides selling food do you do to accomplish that mission?
So we have, education is a big part of what all co-ops do. That's one of the principles of cooperation. So workshops and other things to, help people understand what the co-op difference is, how to, shop and eat in a sustainable and healthy way. And then we do a lot of other things to, support cooperation, support sustainable measures. One of the newer things that we have is the Hunger Mountain Cooperative Community Fund. It's basically an endowment that generates money that we can donate to other co-ops and nonprofits that are aligned with our mission. So 2 years ago, we gave a grant to Granite City Grocery for their feasibility analysis. We did the same thing for the Morrisville Food Co-op last year. And it's part of our mission to support other co-ops, and that's a way we can have more impact. Can't do everything by ourselves. We're part of a network, and supporting other co-ops, other local food businesses is a good way to do that.
You're not cutting your own throat by having a berry operation?
Yeah, a lot of people ask about that. In one sense, it is a form of competition. We certainly have customers and member owners in Barrie and to the east of Barrie. But it's clear that downtown Barrie needs a grocery store. It should be a cooperative, because that's what will be responsive to the needs of the community. And if it is a cooperative, it will sell a mix of foods. It will sell a lot of local foods. It will support democratic ownership, and those are things aligned with our mission. So there's a growing demand for what we do, so there's a need for more cooperation.
How did the Hunger Mountain Co-op start?
It came out of actually Plainfield and Goddard College, I think, was one of the driving forces. Started like a lot of food cooperatives as a buying club, so people didn't have access to certainly natural foods, organic grains and vegetables and things like that. But I've also heard that at that time in the late 60s, early 70s, it was just having access to food, period, to a certain extent, that there wasn't a lot of fresh produce coming into central Vermont. And so that was one of the motivations, was just to have access to food. But it's always had a natural food sort of bent. And anyway, like a lot of co-ops our age, it started as a buying club where people would sort of pool their ordering and get pallets or large quantities of food and then break it down in a basement or a garage. And it grew in popularity to the point where a storefront was justified in Plainfield. And then a split happened where the Montpelier folks started their own storefront, and Hunger Mountain Co-op was born.
It was not an acrimonious split, right?
No, in fact, we still have close relations with Plainfield.
Rats. Just trying to dig up a little controversy. That's Kari Bradley, who's the general manager at Hunger Mountain Co-op. As I mentioned, Chris Riddell is with the Granite City Grocery Co-op. So you've done this feasibility study. What did you find?
Well, we found, first of all, thanks again, Mark, for having me and Kari on the show. And we found that there is demand in Barrie for another food store, particularly downtown. We're the largest city in Vermont without a downtown grocery store. And the market analysis that we had completed shows that there is, given our demographics and the trade area that we would be in, there is sufficient money out there that's not dedicated to any one store. It's called the float in the market. And that number indicates that, in fact, there is capacity for another outlet for food. And one of the things that we did going into that feasibility study was specifically look at what the mix of natural foods versus conventional foods would need to look like. And it sort of, given the demographics of Barry, it reflected what we already knew in our, you know, from talking to people and being and living in Barry, is that we couldn't necessarily be a natural, exclusively natural food store in order to meet the needs of the people who live, shop, and work in Barry.
Is that why other efforts have failed? I mean, I'm thinking of Ariel Zevon's effort, that downtown store she had, that grocery store, for example.
Well, I think
Farmer's Diner, I'm thinking of too.
Sure. I mean, those are kind of different models. I think a couple things are different about those. One is, first of all, we're going to be opening, we're looking to open a full-service grocery store. So 6,000 square feet. That's a little larger than what Lace was trying to do. Mm-hmm. Lace's mission was more focused on local agricultural products exclusively. We're going to be a full-service grocery store. The other thing I think that's really different is being a cooperative. We're going in, we're not going to be opening this business without having a sufficient number of owners who've bought in. So not only do you have that kind of financial support behind you in the form of the equity that they provide by buying a share, but you also have this kind of built-in customer base. You know, the people who own the co-op are naturally going to shop there. And the more the community is invested in this business, I mean, this has been proven across the country in cities that in neighborhoods where people said, oh, that will never work. Cooperatives do work because they have this community base.
Well, I live in Burlington, and I shop regularly at the Burlington co-op, and there are a ton of people that were skeptical, said, oh, it'll never work. There aren't enough people. You know, there aren't enough yuppie and crunchy people to buy the organic food. The place is packed. You can barely get in.
Right. It's a testament to that. I mean, one of the things that we have been doing since the very beginning is we call ourselves Granite City Grocery because we really wanted to help people understand that cooperative is the model. It's, as Kari said, a consumer cooperative is how we're owned. Cooperative doesn't mean that we're going to carry a certain kind of product or not. And that was a little bit, that's something that it requires education. I think a lot of folks in Vermont have, in central Vermont, particularly in Barrie, when they hear co-op, they think of a certain kind of store. And we wanted to say, you know, cooperatives have been around since, in this country, since the early part of the 20th century. And they've been all kinds of things.
Right.
And they've offered all kinds of products.
Electric co-ops.
Exactly. Yeah.
Where are you at in your effort?
Right now, we are we're right over 530 owners. These are folks who have bought a share in the grocery. And our big goal right now is to get to 800 owners. We're using a development model that kind of has benchmarks at different levels of ownership. And that's the point at which we feel we're going to have the financial and organizational wherewithal to commit to a space, a lease on a space.
Okay.
Most likely a lease.
How long does it take you to get to 530?
We've been selling shares since last July, not this past July, but the July before. So, you know, almost, 15 months or so we've been selling shares.
Okay. When do you anticipate opening the store?
So the timeline for opening is really based on, again, I said there are these sort of benchmarks. So we get to 800 owners, that's going to let us commit to a space. Ultimately, we need about 1,200 owners in order to open the store. Once we have a space, we have to line up other financing. It's not just going to be based on member equity. And then we have to hire a general manager, someone who can help plan the store, build out the store if necessary, and ultimately open the door. So, you know, it's a multi-month process for sure. We don't have a firm deadline on when this has to happen, but we do feel like the way that we're going now, it is going to happen. It's just a matter of time.
Talking with Chris Riddell, he's with the Granite City Grocery Co-op. He's the board chair, and also Kari Bradley is the general manager at Hunger Mountain Co-op. We're talking about co-ops, talking about the development of the one here in Barrie. So how much are you charging for a share?
Shares are $200. It's a one-time buy-in. You buy a share, and you're in. And people, we have a variety of payment plans, so some folks are paying as little as $10 a month. Some people are buying it all up front.
Kari, what do you charge for a membership?
Ours is $180, and a lot of people don't realize that it's an investment that you can get back if you ever choose to leave the co-op. So if you think about that, the return on investment can be excellent. When it's just factoring in the economic benefits of shopping at our co-op, we have a patronage refund at the end of the year. We have member specials. We have discounts for different groups and on member appreciation day. So it's really an investment, and people should think about it that way because they're becoming an owner of a business.
But just to be clear, I can shop there. Anybody can shop there if you're not a member.
Correct. And about 30% of our business does go to non-members.
What have you found is the motivation of most people to become a member, since I could shop there without being a member?
Yeah, I think most people want to support it. Even if they're not really clear on what their membership means, I think people feel a sense of connection to the co-op because it's a you know, sort of a center of the community. So I think that's a part of it. And then there are other people that, you know, sort of recognize that ownership and the, you know, so the governance part of it is really important. And that's, you know, what will set us apart in the long run. Co-ops are... I was going to say that the work that Chris and Granite City Grocery have done is pretty amazing because it's very hard to get these co-ops, these food stores off the ground in this day and age. It was a different thing back in the early 70s. Nowadays, it's a lot more capital intensive, a lot more risk. And Granite City Grocery has come a long ways. And it's shown around the country that it's very hard to get going. But once co-ops have started, they have longevity because they have that buy-in from the community.
Why is it so complicated to get it going any more than any store?
Well, grocery stores they have a lot of equipment, and they have a lot of capital needs, and they're basically big refrigerators.
Yes, they could just refrigeration units.
Yeah, and that's really a lot of it. So even a 6,000 square foot store, we're talking about millions of dollars of investment, and that's a lot of risk to take on for a startup business.
Okay, So what mistakes have you made at Hunger Mountain that Chris could learn from here?
You name it. We don't have enough time to go through them all, but a lot of the growing pains of any small business, how to organize, I think initially it was a collective of managers and eventually went to the general manager model. And the hiring of the manager is, that's a challenging thing. And so the growing pains of taking on more staff. So we have a staff of 165 now.
Wow.
That's got its challenges, learning how to do that, learning how to work with local vendors. We work with last year 501 Vermont businesses. So that's a lot of different relationships to manage. But the main thing is that you have a business plan and you're in it for the long haul. You keep improving, continuous improvement. And I think with the support of the community, it's all possible.
Mm-hmm. Chris, what do you think the biggest challenge is going to be here?
Well, I think that there really are two challenges that we're finding. One is getting people to take that little bit of leap of faith that says, okay, I want to buy a share in the grocery store, but I don't want to do that until I know where it's going to be. That's been one of our big obstacles is helping people understand why it's important to buy in now. Mm. Certainly, you can wait, but we can't all wait because you're not going to get this off the ground if we don't get people to believe in it today and buy into it today. So that's one thing. I think the other thing is holding to what we know has worked for other co-ops. We're using a development model that's been used by others that have started up successfully. And sometimes there's that pressure to, well, why don't we go ahead and just find a site? And then we'll get the 800 people we need. We'll do it that way.
Right.
You hear that and sometimes we talk about it and we have to remember that we're working on something that is really important. And time, patience, and doing this step by step is going to ensure that when we do open the doors eventually, it's going to be successful. And I think the worst thing we could possibly do is, take people's faith and their investment and then do something that's overly risky. And then, in a year or two, we have to shut the doors again. And
right.
that would be tragic. So we don't want to do that.
Right. How are you finding investors?
Mainly through word of mouth. We were out in the community. We were at the Berry Farmers Market all summer long tabling. We have members who put on house parties, which are basically potlucks. They invite their friends and neighbors. Someone from the board comes out. We kind of do a little Q&A and a pitch after dinner and sign people up that way. We've been into people's workplaces. We are on social media, Facebook, Twitter. We have a website that people find us. And then we're in, you know, we're just out and about as much as we can, talking to churches, service clubs, downtown merchants. So that's it.
Wow, it sounds like you're everywhere. So, Kari, how much say do members really have in the operations of Hunger Mountain Co-op?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, obviously with 7,000 member owners, you know, you have to sort of manage expectations.
I mean, I want the cinnamon Pop-Tarts, okay? Can you make that happen?
Right. Well, I'll tell you a small thing that maybe sets us apart, and you see it in other stores, but we have a customer comment and suggestion program where people can write down. And what I appreciate about that, there's a transparency to that. You know, we respond to every one of them. If a person wants a call, they're going to get that. Hopefully a good retailer is going to do that anyway. But it's sort of built in, and we reflect back that we are trying to be responsive. We're not everybody can get everything they want, and that's part of it, it's compromised. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's the board of directors that really is where the rubber hits the road in terms of member control, because anybody can run if you're an active member owner, and people get democratically elected, and that's where the, you know, the policies and the big picture and the supervision of the general manager, that's where it happens. So that's very important. And we try as best we can to engage with members and understand what do people want in terms of specific issues and also big picture strategy. And so each year we will typically pick a topic and go through and talk about, you know, what is it the members want? And, you know, reaching people in this day and age can be challenging. Mm-hmm. And not everything speaks to everybody. But I think that we do a pretty good job of reaching out and meeting people where they are in terms of forums or small groups or surveys or whatever it is.
Give me an example, though, of something that has been a member-driven idea that wouldn't have happened at a big supermarket, for example.
Well, you know, one of the things that comes to mind is the last time we did an expansion. And in 2000, the co-op was desperately needed it, and the members ultimately vote on whether an expansion or major investment like that is going to happen or not. And so a lot of people recognized that it needed to happen. A lot of people were on the fence about what form it should take. And so we spent the better part of a year in dialogue with members and staff and vendors and anybody who wanted to talk with us about what form that should take. And by taking our time and having a lot of small groups, a lot of large community forums, individual interviews, and then reflecting back what we were hearing as we were going through that process, we did eventually get a lot of buy-in. And that project was really well supported, and I think it reflected what people wanted. You know, some of the things that we heard were make it safe and efficient for staff. And the other thing was, we want, you know, environmental improvements, you know, reduce the impact of the store, because, you know, grocery stores use a lot of energy. We're just talking about refrigeration. Right. That's, you know, that was a sort of a core value.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the Vermont vendors that you're working with. If there weren't co-ops, what would happen in terms of local produce? Would there be, I mean, would that slack get picked up by the big stores anyway, do you think?
Well, you know, I think that it's certainly evolving, but the large chains, I'm thinking of Shaw's, Price Chopper, and Hannaford's, sell a modest amount of local produce. In my experience, they pay better lip service to it than they actually do it, because it's a somewhat different model to work with all these different small vendors. I mean, placing orders, receiving a lot of small orders, writing a lot of different checks to vendors is not what large supermarkets typically want to do. They want to minimize their costs and deal with as few vendors as possible. And then there are a number of independent grocers in Vermont, but I think it's really been the co-ops at the forefront of supporting the local. So it's either been co-ops or direct sales through the farmers market, or if you're a CSA member, something like that. But that has, you know, I think the Farm to Plate initiative has recognized that only gets us so far. We need to take the next step and get into some of these other grocery stores, and if we're really going to, you know, drive local food sales.
Mm-hmm. Kari, you said you had 7,000 members at Hunger Mountain Co-op. How on earth is Chris here going to be able to open this place with only 800 and with the idea of getting to 1,200? I mean, it just sounds like the numbers don't work.
Well, it's a matter of scale. So we're a 20,000 square foot store that's doing $22 million in sales. And Chris is looking at a 6,000 square foot store. And I forget what the revenue number is, but it'll be something less than $22
million. South of
22. And you know, it's the same principles. The ratios have to work, but it can be done at a smaller scale for sure.
Okay. What would you say to that question?
Well, I would say that's exactly it. And also that Hunger Mountain Co-op didn't open its doors with 7,000 members. And we hopefully...
They were all there.
Right. I think over time, you know, once we would strive to reach that level of ownership too. But we know, what we do know is based on our feasibility study and the pro formas that we have that were developed for the business with a 10-year projection for cash flow, we know that we can open it with 12,000 owners. So 1,200, sorry, excuse me. Yes, 1,200 owners, right?
And you're dreaming. That's all right. It's okay to dream big. All right, let me ask a sort of critical question here. I mean, you're talking, I think you referred to this before too, about the market in Barrie. It's a different demographic, I think you called it. It really is a different market. So how are you going to adjust to that? I mean, and I don't want to overgeneralize here or oversimplify this, but it's more of a blue-collar community than certainly Montpelier, I think most people would say.
Sure. No, I think those of us who live in Barrie are really proud of that and embrace that. Part of that will be the mix of products on the shelf will certainly, I think, will be different than what you might find in Hunger Mountain Co-op. We're going to strive to provide choices to the people who shop there, including our owners and other customers who come in. We're going to have things on the shelf that they're going to want to buy. I mean, that's fundamental. I think the other thing is that Kari talked about is one of the principles of cooperatives is education. And, you know, it's amazing when people learn about how much less expensive it is to buy fresh fruits and vegetables and prepare them correctly so they taste well, you know, that becomes something that you have an opportunity to talk to people about, not something you're going to find at a chain grocery store necessarily. You might find some recipe cards stuck on an end cap, but you're probably not going to find someone demoing in store, how would I cook this winter squash? And you're like, hey, this is how you do it, and this is how it tastes. And that's an opportunity we have to talk to people who may not be thinking about, how will fresh produce help me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There must be, obviously, there's downtown space in Barrie. It's had some vacancies. So do you have some clue where you want to go?
We do. We've had a site review committee since the beginning that has gone through a process of, for the market study, we had to identify 7 potential sites in order just to have them look and sort of assess it. Locations on a, you know, from an outside standpoint. Right now, I think there are probably 4 sites that we're really actively working on. We have a matrix of criteria that we developed, everything from parking to visibility to square footage, signage, access, lots of things. And that committee is working on, you know, getting more concrete with that list. We haven't begun the process of really talking to specific landlords about numbers, but we're getting close to that.
Okay. All right. Any other advice do you have for this nice young man here?
Well, it's perseverance. That's, I think, a large part of it. There is a need in the community, and so with enough organization and support, it can definitely happen. And you know, Hunger Mountain will be there to help with especially with the technical part as we get into what does the business plan actually look like and how do you run one of these stores anyway.
You know, it's fascinating. In Burlington, people go back even further than I do. I mean, the store that I remember was the one up near the Dairy Queen. There was actually one even earlier than that. But, you know, that store, you could barely get through. Then they moved downtown. As I said, there were so many people that were skeptical about that. And I would dare say they need to expand again.
Oh, there's no question. That is, I mentioned earlier, that's the largest single store cooperative, food cooperative in the country. It's just an amazing success story. And, you know, they're actively looking at a second location. I'm sure that will be wildly successful.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. All right. Hey, thanks for coming in. So how can people get a hold of you, Chris, if they want to get more information about the Granite City Grocery Co-op idea here?
Sure. The best way is to go to our website. It's granitecitygrocery.coop. And you can find information about how to contact us. There's a link for becoming an owner. And we respond to all the feedback that's through that website. You can find our phone number there as well.
All right, and in a couple of years, Global Foundry's online, too, for you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks,
Chris Riddell is with the Granite City Grocery, and Kari Bradley's the general manager at Hunger Mountain Co-op. We'll take a quick break here. We're going to find out all about the, get the story behind the story and the St. Albans raid. Well, and Governor Shumlin joins us coming up at about 10, somewhere between 10:15 and 10:30, we expect to hear from, to talk about the IBM deal. We'll be back right after this.
Used, pre-owned. Less.